You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 5th of December. Wow, that was lots of fun. We'll look at the blowout win over the Spurs, what the Jazz did so darn well in that matchup, both offensively and defensively. Look at some of the numbers and some of the good indicators that are going on with the Utah Jazz right now. Plus, should we start Survivor playoff version? We'll explain. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. Thanks so very much for tuning in to this edition of Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, and geeky numbers with a regular basis. You can get it on Apple Podcasts, on any of your podcast catchers, and tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On Jazz. I want to take a moment, and we might do a little fun promotion on this as well, but the other day, Level 9 Sports has offered to give me a pair of skis to give away, and I was trying to figure out how we would do it. So I was looking, actually, at my iTunes, because I was like, well, maybe we can do something where people enter by leaving a review or something. Like, it's hard with podcasts of how to do giveaways. And I didn't realize, and I just want to say thank you. I did not realize that there are 732 reviews and we're at 5 stars. That's like incredible. Thank you very much. Really appreciate that. I was kind of blown away. I just didn't know it. I hear all the podcasts all the time say, like, please rate and review and do all of those things. And I have just, it's not something that I've totally done. But I should, and I should say thank you. Kobe24, MJ24 left a review this week and said it was great. And Mantis, who seems to be a doctor, gave me only 3 stars. He says, I love to contradict myself within a span of 7 to 8 minutes. You know, all right, so he only gave me, but I don't mind that. James, well, thank you. So he just gave a long review. So anyway, I wanted to say thanks. And I was kind of blown away when I saw that. We'll try to run some sort of promotion there. But I just wanted to say thanks. Is that cool? All right, let's get to it. 23s last night, but I don't, and there's a lot to that, but I don't, to me, that's not the story. To me, the Jazz defense last night was just terrific. Some of it is, frankly, an absurdity of the Spurs offense. The Spurs offense shot 52, according to Clean the Glass. I haven't seen the final number. Mid-range shots. But the Jazz also came in with a very, very detailed, specific plan last night to force LaMarcus Aldridge and DeMar DeRozan out of their comfort zones, and they did it beautifully. And sometimes it's defending long before they get the ball. And what was happening last night was DeRozan and Aldridge were getting the balls in spots where they were uncomfortable and they didn't want to work. DeRozan is far better on the right side of the floor than the left. Aldridge wants to work on the left side of the floor. Aldridge is actually good on an angle right. He likes the left block, but on the long jumper right side, he's really good. On the left side, he's 4 of 18. And he got those first two early in the game, and then the Jazz kind of took that away from him and forced him over the left side, and he got much less comfortable. And they didn't want to let Aldridge to the middle of the paint off that post move. And he, because he's, if you look at synergy numbers, he's only drop stepped to the rim, like he's only drop stepped like 5 times all year and only gone to the rim once if you take that away. And the Jazz took that away beautifully, and Aldridge kind of, I don't know, didn't do much. I mean, they took 16 shots at the rim last night is all. Only 16 shots at the rim. Then you take away the corner three where you only allow 5 of those, and you only allow 6 above the 16 above the break threes, and that's a, Jazz killed it. They took, final number is correct, 52 mid-range shots last night. And they hit them at above league average, but you, particularly when you're behind, you can't come back from that. Let's do a quick scan of the numbers last night. The Jazz had their best offensive game of the year, a 131 offensive rating, surpassing the previous game against the Boston Celtics when they had a 124. offensive ranking. And obviously the common denominator is three-point shooting in a lot of these. The Jazz 20 of 33 last night from three, all-time franchise record. Plus they took 17 of 20 from the free throw line, hit 85%. And overall were obviously just, they were just great last night. They made 61% of their shots as well. You know, the easy answer is that Korver's involved. I do think there's some element that, frankly, three guys that weren't shooting well, Alec Burks, Dante Exum, and Derek Favors are not taking threes. That's part of it. Royce O'Neal is making threes, who was not making threes. That's part of it. And then Kyle Korver's making threes, and Jay Crowder's making threes. So you have a combination of three things going on. One is that guys who weren't making them aren't taking them. And two is that the guys who kind of you have to make them are starting to take them better. Quinn Snyder talked about the floor spacing. The Jazz have always been one of the best teams in the league, if not the best, at getting corner threes. They got 13 corner threes against Miami. They made two. Last night, they got 12 corner threes, which is the second best shot in the game. They made nine. Donovan Mitchell last night made three corner threes. Prior to that, he was 2 of 15 for the season on corner threes after hitting 50% last year. So some of this is obviously just the ball goes in. But I think a lot of last night was defense. The defense early in the game was so good that it allowed the offense to get going. And there are some pretty good signs right now that things are turning the corner a little bit defensively for the Utah Jazz. So the first one is that last night, first quarter, I think the defensive rating was a 74. The second one, the defensive rating was about a but it was about a 90 at halftime, and then, you know, it's a blowout. By the end, it wasn't quite as perfect. But if we start to look at what the Jazz are doing defensively, we're beginning to see stretches again where they are elite defensively. So last year, our kind of number was 100, right? The offensive rating in the league was about 107 was the league average. And right now, it's about the exact same. That's about where the average offensive team is they're about 106, 107 offensively. So anytime the Jazz can drop under 100, that's a great defensive game. And look at what they've begun to do here. Again, last night was a 101. That's pretty close. Miami was a 101. Charlotte wasn't great, but the offense was fabulous. Brooklyn was an 87. So now three of the last four games are touching on. Indiana, which was just a joke of a scheduling game, they were at a 117, so they were disastrous, but we lost by 33. Sacramento at a 103. LA at an 85. So Sacramento at home was terrible, which was a ridiculous scheduling game. Fifth game of a road trip was bad. Boston was good. Memphis was good. Dallas at home was good. You're beginning to see it. Boston was not good, but we won. I think sometimes your defense gets less good as when you're up by a lot or you're in control. So you're beginning to see. You've now seen three of the last four, six of the last eight games where the defense has kind of begun to click in. And if you look at the Jazz ratings over this stretch, over the last 10 games are the eighth best defense in the league. That's going to continue to drop because they've got two brutal defensive games in there 9 and 10 games ago. 9 games ago, they allowed 119 to Sacramento in the loss and then 123 to Indiana. So those two games fall off here in our next two, Houston and San Antonio. And if you have two good defensive games and all of a sudden the Jazz defense is revving back up to the point where it needed to go. Or where it needs to go. So that's a really good sign of what's taking place defensively. And I thought last night was spurred on by the defense. And if you look over the last 10 games, almost all of our statistics are now above average. We're not forcing quite as many turnovers, and we're not great defending the shot. Some of that is we've had really bad luck defensively, and that will correct itself and start to come back in our direction. You just can't have. We've had outlier mid-range shooting and a little bit of outlier above-the-break shooting against us. And if you look over the history of the year of the league, when you're dealing with opponent shooting percentage, it kind of comes back. And so I would suspect that will start to fall back in line of where it should, and you'll see the Jazz playing much better. Today's show, just here, I'll back that up with some numbers for you. The Jazz currently ranked 26th defensively against all mid-range shots, 42.9. That number will come down. They're 28th in the league on all non-corner threes. That's 38%. That number will come down. And then the Jazz, if they continue to play the way they're playing, we'll see the fact that they are denying the corner, the above-the-break three and the corner three is probably more important than whether the ball is going in for the long term of the season. I know that sounds wacky and crazy, but it's actually true. It's coming back around. That's the offensive, the rebounding rate's the same. The free throw rate, they're forcing turnovers more than they used to were earlier the last few games. They've picked it back up. Rubio's got it going a little bit. So defensive signs are really good. Today's show is brought to you by The Store at 6200 South and 20th East. The Store's got all sorts of fun holiday things for you that you're going to want to go grab. The June pies are the fabulous element things. They had Thanksgiving leftover pie when I was there yesterday. I picked up the barbecue chicken in the back, which I love, the white chicken strips. I love that for my post-ski lunch when I was over there at the Store the other day. And they were sold out of the Mudslide cookie. So despite what people might be saying that it's not the number one selling cookie, they were out of the dough because everybody had bought so many Mudslide cookies. Nice work, people. Nice work. 6200 South, 20th East. Stop by the Store. My favorite thing when I go to the Store is when I'm always in the parking lot and I see one of their workers rolling the cart out for one of their customers. Kind of the old school community feel where one of the young high school kids that works there is helping the older person with their bags and taking them to their car for them. It makes you feel good. Love that. Love that. Today's show is also brought to you by grip6.com/lock. The great belts of Grip 6. Perfect holiday gift for you. You certainly want to check this out. They got two deals for you. But if you don't know about Grip 6, belt company, made in Utah, really creative guy who just kind of was figuring, didn't like his belts, figured out. And so the coolest thing about the belt is that it has no strap, it has no loops, and it has no holes, and it has no flaps. It takes actually and comes in locks on the inside of your belt, so it's clean. And then you can tighten it perfectly to whatever fits you the best. And so if you're like me at this point of the season, it might be a little wider than it was early in the year, but you're not going to a new belt hole, or you don't have the old hole looking like it's worn out so everybody can see that maybe you've stretched out a little bit. It's really, really well done. At grip6.com/lock, you can get the classic pack, 33% off, three buckles, three straps, including a Grip 6 hanger. That's a fabulous gift idea for you. Use the promo code LOCK89 on that. LOCK20 also gets you 20% off the accessories, and they have some special deals going on. They have women's, they have kids, and they have the great men's lineup, and then they're very creative with the different buckles and things they have out there. Well, I can't say I got my dad one of these because then he knows about it. But they have the Flag Series, which is super cool. They have the new Mountain Series I really like, where they have three iconic mountains. One is Teton, one is Half Dome, and one is Mount Whitney on a belt. So that looks really cool. That's grip6.com/lock. All right, let's run through a few things also that I thought were brilliant about what the Jazz did last night defensively. San Antonio did not shoot a free throw until the 2:55 mark of the first half. Their first free throw came at the 2:55 mark of the first half. That's playing your game plan, playing plugged in, being focused. That was what jumped out to me more last night than anything. And obviously when you win by 30, you feel good about yourself. But the Jazz had one of the great shooting nights of all time. There's only been five teams have ever hit 20 threes and had in like 33 attempts. Like, there's only been like 80 teams that have ever hit 23s in a game. It's not, does not happen. And according to Cleaning the Glass, they were at the 99th percentile of all shooting this year. And against Charlotte, we were the 97th percentile of all shooting. So two of our last three games, we have really, really lit it up offensively. What I do think is exciting about that is just, I think it's showing a level of focus and a level of detail that as fatigue lessens, we are going to see out of this team. And today is the first time since November 8th that we have a day at home without a plane flight or a game. So it's been almost a month since we've had a day at home without a plane flight or a game. The Jazz will probably go through light practice today and then get ready for Houston tomorrow. Night game, 8:30. Some tickets are still available. And then we play, get Friday off, another day in Salt Lake without a game or a plane flight, fly to San Antonio for a back-to-back, come back home Tuesday, play Wednesday, then have Thursday with a day off without a game before we head to Mexico City. So that should be really interesting to get to go to Mexico City, and then we head to Houston for road games, and then it really lessens up. Then we play 5 of 6 at home. We're playing good opponents, but we're on the backside of the brutal part of the schedule. And I think that's certainly important. Last night, all 12 players, this is ESPN Stats and Info, who play, or all 13 Jazz players had a point, rebound, or assist. That's only happened twice before. That's kind of cool just to have everybody get that. Grayson was inactive last night, having played the 36 minutes the night before in the G League. He probably could have gotten a chance to get rolling a little bit there. The thing that also jumps out to me is right now is the play of Ricky Rubio. Ricky Rubio came into last night's game, last 10 games, having shot 46% from the field and 40% from three. That's Ricky Rubio of the second half of the season last year. That, you know, that's what we're all hoping to see from Ricky, and he is maybe clicked in a little bit in when he is playing. There was even a three last night where he got an open look, and, you know, I went into the call before it was released. His shot looks good. His warm-up shot looks great. He plays with a zest and a confidence. When he is bypassing open looks, it is incredibly difficult for the Jazz offense to work correctly. The key to him, in my opinion, is getting shots in the restricted area. When he's able to get one or two layups a night, it just changes everything into his game. First of all, it's a high percentage shot if he's making them. And secondarily, it just frees, that makes that Nash dribble real. It makes everything he's doing. It's when he starts to get tentative about those shots is when he ends up having these bad shooting nights. And if you kind of take him back 10 games, 2 for 3 at the rim against the Lakers, 6 of 6 against the Kings, 1 of 2 against Indiana, didn't get to the rim against Brooklyn, went 0 for 9 that game. 3 for 3 against the Hornets, 2 for 2 against the Heat, 2 for 3 last night. Though opens up a great deal. I mean, last night he hit his 2 of 3 on above the break threes, which he's shooting a little bit better in the last few games. He was 1 of 4 on mid-range shots. He was 0 of 2 against Charlotte. He was 0 of 4 against, Brooklyn, he had a bad night. But if he gets those other ones and he misses some of his mid-range shots, and he can get those 2 or 3 layups a night, it really just opens up the doors for him for so much. And it opens up a door for a lot of the offense, too. I think that's equally important. But he has begun, you know, he does not get a huge, he's for every 4 threes that, you know, every 5 threes he takes, one of them is probably a corner three, and then 4 or 5 of them are above the break threes. So that above the break three for him is a pretty important shot. He's got to be able to try to knock down 30-some-odd percent, 35% would be probably ideal on that one. He's 33% on the season, which is not quite great, but if he's able to get it back up, and in the last, since that game, I think I have it since, what, the November 19th game, he's 12 of 32, so he's at 38%. That gets it done. And I can back that up, and actually, if I actually just chose that, but I could back him up and actually help him out a little bit if I was trying to fiddle with numbers and make rookie look better. I think if I back this up three more games, he actually gets a little bit better. He gets to, yeah, he's at 37%. So he's at 37% now for about 12 games from the above the break three. That makes an awfully big difference for the Jazz. He's 36% on the corner three. Hadn't hit one in a little while. Got one against Miami. Didn't take one against San Antonio. His mid-range jumper is a 40% shot. That's about where he was last year. And then the key to the whole thing is whether Ricky can get on the rim or not. But if Ricky is coming back around, that clears the offense a little bit of things. And then Jay Crowder is not a 28% three-point shooter. He's pretty hot right now. in clear, he's streaky. I think he probably is a 33% three-point shooter. I don't really think that he's that one year in Boston seems to be an outlier in his career, but you know, in his last, he's up to 34% on the above the break, which was down below 30 because he's red hot right now. He's 11 of his last 18 from, oh, he's actually even better than that. He's 13 of his last 20 on above the break threes over the last five games. That certainly helps our 3-point shooting a lot, and probably a little unnatural, but so was the, you know, 4-for-25 stretch that he had in there also. Korver gives you just, you know, and when you're exchanging Korver shots for AB shots and some of those things, I do think that helps out. And frankly, Howell Neto taking a shot over Dante Exum helps your shooting a little bit right now. Good to see Dante get out there and get some time. And I thought played with some good aggression. He's going to put it back together. I like watching him right now off the ball. I like him as a driver off the ball who shoots that corner three. I don't know. I kind of feel like he could be Trevor Ariza with speed. Is that a fair call for Dante Exum? Is that not, you know, we love to player comp everyone to, you know, we love to do Donovan Mitchell to Dwayne Wade when the chances are, you know, Victor Oladipo is the right comp. So we love to do Dante to a star, but who's a good rotation player in the NBA that plays with game-changing speed, very good defensively, and maybe can just knock down enough corner threes to really help the Jazz out? Like that would be my hope on where, how Dante can get back into the game. But, you know, offensively, when Dante's on the floor, our offensive rating is 100. And when he's off the floor, it's a 107.4. That's a pretty dramatic difference right now. And I think, you know, him being out of the rotation is helping the offense, unfortunately. I think that's truthful. Today's show is brought to you by Murdoch Hyundai. I got it. I got the brand new Santa Fe. Okay, this is so incredible. I've seen the ad. I didn't really understand how it works. So in the back seat of the Hyundai Santa Fe, if a kid tries to open a door and there's a car coming, the door automatically like vacuum locks so that the kid can't open the door into oncoming traffic. I think that's the right way to phrase it. It's pretty incredible. I was really kind of blown away that there's that kind of, the technology these guys come up with is just awesome. And that's kind of the essence. It's called Safe Exit Assist. The official phrase is Safe Exit. You know what's also cool? On the 2019 that I'm driving right now, all of the features we added on to the 2018 that we actually bought personally are now standard. So lane keep assist, blind spot detection, 360-degree camera, adaptive cruise control. Those are all standard on the 2019 Santa Fe. It's really cool. Shop by Murdoch Hyundai. If you're looking for a new car in this Christmas season and you do not have Hyundai on the list, add it. Take a moment. Look at the Hyundai and see what you can get for the price. Because you're going to be able to get more features, more details, more safety inspections, better intuitive inside technology than you can get elsewhere for less money. It's pretty cool. Check it out. Murdoch Hyundai, 4646 South State Street. So I was wondering, I don't think it would quite work, but is there a way to play survivor with NBA teams and vote them in or out of the playoff race in the Western Conference? We have 14 teams. The problem was it happened too fast. Like, if we started now in December, we'd have to have the 8 playoff teams by the middle of January, and there's no way we could. But maybe we can do like what they do on these game shows where, like, Amazing Race brings back past members. There's a pretty good claim that you could vote the Spurs off playoff island. I mean, I know they're only 11 and 13 now, but they allowed 139 points last night. They've allowed 135 points 5 times. They did that 4 times in their 28 previous seasons. They've lost by 30 or more in 3 of their last 4. Greg Popovich has done that 5 times in 1,700-plus games. The one that jumps out to me more about the Spurs is they've trailed by 10 or more in almost 60% of their minutes. That one to me is I've always looked at that number. The number that I always look to see is, like, who's getting run? Like, last year we were really on the bad side of this, so maybe it turns out to not be, you know, the greatest number ever. But last year, like, I always look at, I always kind of take the look, I look at 15, I think it's down by 15 or more. When trailing by 15 or more. And so this year, I have to do teams, sorry. This year teams are, and 15's a lot. So this year, teams have trailed by 15 or more. Atlanta, Phoenix, Washington's trailed by 1,100. Denver has only trailed by 15 points 18 minutes all season. Toronto is the next at 86. Now, actually, you have to divide this by 5 because the way this silly stat does it, it does it by all the players' minutes. So, actually, Denver has only trailed by 15 3 or 4 minutes all year, I think. Though that's weird. 18 doesn't divide by 5, so a little less than. Toronto is next, then the Clippers, then the Bucks, then the Thunder. Then the 76ers, the Grizzlies have only trailed by 15 in 3 games this year. We're at 9. We're pretty high on the list. If you do it by games, we get higher on that list. I was just sharing a stats program with someone who got logged off. But I always like to look at that. San Antonio's high on this list of trailing by 15. A little bit of a, you know, 15's a lot, and 10 can happen pretty fast. There's a bunch of different ways to look at it. My friend Alan Horton with the Timberwolves has done some neat things about, you know, if you get up by this amount, how often do you win? And if you get up by 15, you win like 86% of the time, which is what makes that Miami loss painful for the Jazz. But I wonder on San Antonio, this is a key stretch. They play the Lakers in their next 2 and then play us. They get us, you know, pretty quickly again. I'm sure they'll be ready to fire at us, though they do play 3 games here in the span of when we play 2. Or they play 2 when we play 1. So they'll have played a few extra, and they'll play the Lakers back-to-back games in that process. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. I wouldn't quite vote him off. I mean, I think we'd start if we were to play this silly game. We'd vote the Suns off the island first. Poor Igor. But I wonder, of all the teams in the Western Conference, if you had to take another team and vote them off the island, whether or not you might vote the Spurs off first of all the rest of those teams. You know, you can, going into last night, the Spurs had been down by 10 or more in 11 games, or 10 or more in 10 games. That's one of the higher numbers in the league. We're at the same thing. We're at 10 also. Atlanta's 17. going into last night. Portland's 14. Phoenix is 14. Washington's 13. Cleveland's 13. I mean, you're in some not great company here. The Spurs, for whatever reason, getting blown out at an alarming rate. They've been down 15 six times. We've been down 15 eight times. Cleveland's been down 15 12 times. That is Locked On Jazz today. Hope you're great. Thanks very much for tuning in. Appreciate your support of the program and of our sponsors. Have a great one. Good fun on Locked On NBA with Ben Golliver. Make sure you grab that. It is all here on the Locked On Podcast Network.